Are you looking for a unique way to support Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles? KPFK's vehicle donation program not only supports public radio, but it helps you get a tax deduction too. The process is easy. Just call 877-KPFK-AUTO. That's 877-KPFK-AUTO.
This is Quetzal Flores from the band Quetzal, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 Los Angeles.
Cue the conga playing penguins.
Live at you. For real.
The program's about to begin.
Radio.
For the people.
Orale,
it's the Po-Child Power, KPFK 90.7 FM, 3 o'clock. I'm Jeff Keller.
I am Esteban Zul, and we are in the casa. What's up?
Lalo Alcaraz, make some room.
And he's not in the casa.
I'm in...
You're in the ethereal space of technology. Where are
I'm
you,
in
man?
In the raza, that's where I'm at, man. Wow, what a week, guys. We had a wild week to this, the Ides of March, man. They came on strong, and we're going to, of course, have all of our great guests, Patricia Guadalupe joining us from Washington, D.C., Frank Contreras joining us from Mexico City, our Latin America correspondent. Also Meredith Brown, immigration attorney of great renown, joining us a little later. But a little bit down the clock, we're going to be joined by a prominent Mexican psychotherapist, Dr. Laura Calderon de la Barca.
Uh-huh. I'm glad you said it.
Thank you. She specializes in individual, collective, and systemic trauma. And we're going to...
There's a lot of that going around these days.
Yes, and I wish I could take credit for this idea, but it's Frank Contreras suggested it. So,
he suggested that we all suffer collective trauma?
Yeah. Well, he said, since you're suffering collective trauma, known as the Pocho Hour Power, why not talk about the other?
Yeah, the Pocho Hour Power mostly inflicts it.
I worked with kids that were sexually and physically abused for about 4 years.
Yeah, man, so, that's tough. It's tough news. It's horrifying news about Cesar Chavez, right?
Yes, and we want to talk about it. And you know, I'm not a crunchy therapist guy, but I thought that was the best idea I heard all week. You know, let's all talk about this a little bit and see if we can help people out in the community that are obviously, if you go on social media, it's a free for all of just everyone's feelings and political thoughts and just everything, you know, people describing their own traumas, sexual assaults, and it's just a lot. So I thought maybe we should try to puncture that bubble for everybody, or that big balloon of trauma here on the Pocho Hour of Trauma.
We're here to help people. That's what we do.
Yeah, well,
are we?
I don't know.
Is that what we're doing here?
Hey, I tell you what, though, Zoo left the house on last Saturday night.
What's that now?
I said, you left the house last Saturday night.
What, my house or yours?
Your house.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because you seldom let me escape your house if I ever go there.
What happened?
He came to the comedy show.
Oh!
I did. I sat in, and I came with a very critical eye. I want to see what's going on. What's all this Jeff Keller hullabaloo about?
What's all this hype and buzz?
What is all this stuff? All the hype that I'm hearing about Jeff Keller, it mostly comes from Jeff Keller. So, you know, I had to check it out. But you know what? It was a good show. Jeff had a great set. It was funny as hell. And
did you heckle?
No, I didn't heckle him. I just sent him my heckles on a paper airplane.
He texts me heckles while I was on stage.
Yeah.
Boo, you suck. I'm like, wait, what?
Boo.
Who texts me that?
Oh, boo, okay. Pocho. Boo.
That's what I told him. I had him singing old white spirituals the whole night.
Okay.
Yeah, we were picking crops and singing Jimmy Crack Corn.
She'll be coming around the mountain when she comes. All of them. She's singing all of them.
All the white spirituals were sung that night.
Yes.
By a largely white audience who seemed to enjoy it.
And knew the words.
They knew all the words. It was crazy. It was like we were in church.
So you guys sang Sweet Caroline.
That was the closer.
How does he know that? Has he been to your show?
No, he's never been.
That was the closer.
Church. Yeah, no, what I say to set the joke up, I go, after all the immigrants are gone, and that MAGA, all those guys sitting in their mama's basements going to be out there picking strawberries and grapes, singing old white spirituals. And I'm like, white people, you know what? Jimmy Crack Corn and singer people, and they start singing. They're coming around, they do it all. Then I go, you know, the greatest white spiritual is hands, touching hands, reaching out. And they all start singing it, and while they're singing it, I go, yeah, you're going to be singing that while you're going. Right, you picking them strawberries and grapes and going, dang, Trump was right. We are some dumb idiots.
See, we are helping people forget about the serious stuff that happened this week.
So. That's what we do, man.
All right. Well, I think it's time to strike up the band.
They here?
Yeah.
The band is always late. Are they really here?
Sweet Caroline. Not that band.
Patricia Guadalupe, board your correspondent from Washington, D.C. Hail to Patricia, she comes to spread the cheese. She comes with all the gossip, she's here to spill the tea.
Coming in show.
Brilliant! That was brilliant.
All right, I'm here. Hello.
All right, Patricia Guadalupe, welcome back to Pocho Hour Power. Are you sure you want to be here?
Well, you know, it is a terrible situation what has happened, but I have to say that it's shocking, but it's not surprising.
That's either. Right. Patricia, you just have to look at the Pocho Hour of Power as your parole agent, and you have to check in once a week.
But yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. I'm checking in once a week, and even though we have a really heavy topic with Cesar Chavez and an incredible icon, Dolores Huerta. I'm just amazed at her resilience and what she's done all these years. I have to add a teeny bit of levity to this. And it is that Carlos Santana is getting burned big time on social media because he said yesterday, he started in a tweet, really nice, started out really nice. I support Dolores Huerta. She's done wonderful stuff. I have sent $1,000. I've donated $1,000 to her foundation. And everybody said, really, Carlos? That's what you can do, $1,000? Come on, do better than that. I can send her $1,000. Well, you know, come on, man. And people were, you know, sell one of your Grammys and give it to her. You know, this is the kind of stuff that was happening on social media. But the most disappointing thing of all of this, besides finding out about what Chavez did, was the reaction of a lot of people. Is it really true? I mean, what is the evidence? I mean, 5 years of an investigation, speaking to 60 people, including the very much alive Dolores Huerta,
yeah,
and still wondering if it's true. That's just, you know, ridiculous.
I did not want to engage with anybody online. I did my cartoon and I kind of spoke my piece. I did a cartoon about the coming erasure of Cesar Chavez from monuments and murals, specifically in my cartoon. But some of the stuff that I saw out there was really offensive and not, you know, a lot of so-called liberal and progressive people were saying the textbook, you know, I don't believe the victims. Rhetoric and worse.
Oh, yeah.
Like questioning, questioning Dolores Huerta's life choices and, you know, like.
How can you do that? I mean, look at her life.
It was really just, I was really let down by that.
And even in the Latino community about, you know, well, how come we're tearing down Cesar Chavez and no one's really saying anything about Epstein or anybody else, you know?
Everything about everyone.
Yeah, I mean, the whataboutism is the thing that's really annoying. Right.
But the one, what about Carlos Santana is my next what about? Because you said he only he only gave $1,000. And a lot of people believe that his most valuable collection is his music collection. But that's not true. His most valuable collection is his Doobie collection.
Well, then maybe he could sell some of that, you know?
He already smoked.
I was waiting for the band to hit a rim shot.
Yeah, I was like, "Shut up, you know." I mean, it's almost like, you know, this is a very human reaction to something like this, is that, you know, you're trying to find some sort of levity and humor into some of the stuff that's going on, including this horrendous news that comes out right around the time that there's a discussion in the Congress about talking about voter, the SAVE Act, which is trying to disenfranchise a lot of voters by requiring a passport and a birth certificate to vote. And so a lot of people were questioning the timing of this particular article, that it made a lot of folks say, well, what do you expect? You know, they're trying to tear down a Latino icon, a Latino hero. And then, you know, how fast the reaction was, let's say, for instance, in California, where there's an effort to rename the Cesar Chavez holiday to Farm Workers Day holiday. And not too many people are happy about the almost instant reaction to a lot of this stuff. But it's all about that whataboutism, because, you know, everything, you know, continues, all of the nonsense continues in Washington, even with all of this going on, including, not to change the subject abruptly, but a little bit more levity, a FEMA official, Greg Phillips, has said that he was teleported by aliens to a Waffle House in Georgia.
Was he using that to explain?
Carlos Santana.
That's some good weed right there.
Or he had waffles with Carlos Santana.
Maybe he needs to get together with Carlos Santana, because he said, well, I didn't say it while I was a FEMA official. This was before I became a FEMA official, you know? It didn't happen just once. It happened twice, according to him. It sounds like an SNL skit, but that's exactly what he said.
I kind of believe him, because he didn't go to Roscoe's, so I understand the Waffle House.
Yeah, the aliens would know to go to Roscoe's over Waffle House.
It's just insane. And then you had the hearing with Mark Wayne Mullen, the senator from Oklahoma, who's going to be taking over Kristi Noem's job as DHS secretary. They basically, went after him in the Senate. The Senate chair of the committee that was overseeing that particular agency, Rand Paul, if you remember, about eight or nine years ago, he was beaten badly by a neighbor, broke a bunch of ribs, broke a leg, screwed up his shoulder, and Mark Wayne Mullen at the time cheered him on, saying, I don't like Rand Paul, and I think that, you know, he deserved to get the crap beaten out of him. So yesterday, Rand Paul said during the hearing, well, you know, this is your chance to tell me why you said those things. And he said, oh, you're just trying to assassinate my character. And he said, you know, you're the one that started this whole thing. And it turned almost into a shouting match, because Mullen said that he was also a secret agent for the CIA, even though he has no evidence of that. and that he's taken foreign trips disguised as a secret agent, meaning, in his words, I had to grow a beard to hide myself. This is the person who's taken over PHS.
He must be hanging out with the FEMA guy. They must be smoking some good.
This guy,
there's some serious sensimillion going around.
But hasn't this guy also like challenged other people to fist fights and stuff?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he challenged the president of the Teamsters of all the unions.
He looked tough too.
Come on, you're going to end up this.
You know what the Teamster guy said? You know what the Teamster guy said to him? Yeah. Mueller act all hard and stuff. Hey, man, we could take this outside. And the teacher guy looked at him and said, well, let's go.
Yeah, he did. He's like, yeah, let's go. And, you know, I think that was
And then Mueller had to look for his friends to hold him back, right? Hold me back.
That was crazy.
I think that was the last sentence that anybody ever heard Jimmy Hoffa say, let's go. Yeah. And we know the
But with that SAVE Act, what you're talking about earlier, like I wouldn't be able to vote because my name on my birth certificate is different than my name on my passport.
Yeah. And any woman who's married and changed their name when they got married.
I think you need a passport just because they want you to vote in another country.
Or they're just trying to make it really hard. But the funny thing about that is that it's going to disenfranchise a lot of red state voters.
Having a passport, not a lot of people do. There's people who just never leave the country.
Right.
Most of the people who have passports in the U.S. live in blue states.
But don't they want you to show two?
You have to have your birth certificate.
Two IDs.
Right?
But you got to show two IDs. You see what I'm saying?
And a passport.
Like on my birth certificate, it says Jeffrey Kurt
Does
Pittman.
My Ralph's card count?
No.
Okay.
It says Jeffrey Kurt Pittman, but on my passport it says Jeffrey Keller. So I wouldn't be able to use those IDs.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, what about all those Hollywood people that have all of those names that
Wait,
are not
Are you a spy, name? Jeffrey?
I have a beard.
You have a fake beard in your
and I
in
hung
your
out,
backpack.
And
there?
I hung out at the Waffle House.
He has a fake beard in his gym bag. I knew it.
Yeah, my ID says Lalo Mark Wayne Mullen.
Well, that was only because you wanted to buy a house in a nice neighborhood.
And I didn't want to get kicked out of the Cracker Barrel.
So, this is the guy that is, going to take over the DHS. And then that same day, the national Tulsi Gabbard, who's the national intelligence person, they asked her, well, how come in your written testimony you said that Iran was not an imminent threat, but in the hearing, you decided not to say that. A real sharp senator from Georgia, Ossoff, asked her, hey, I read the whole thing, and you skipped about a page and a half out of your written testimony. And she said, well, the president is the one that decides. Actually, that is not true. And the law says that the president cannot decide ultimately without consultation with the intelligence community, which he didn't do. So it's just, it's been one comic book sketch after another, Lalo, in town with all of this going on.
Wow.
And meanwhile, the Defense Secretary is asking Congress for $500 billion, $200 to $500 billion. And it's already costing the U.S. $1 billion a day to be stuck in this whole rabbit hole that we're going down in Iran. So we could have never predicted last Friday what was going on, not just with the Cesar Chavez story, but also with everything else, because it's just such an unpredictable time, especially here in Washington, where so many things are going on that make absolutely no sense.
Right, like Joe Kent, when he resigned, the director of National Counterterrorism, and they just tried to smear him all through the news because he was telling the truth.
Right, yeah, but they did the same thing to his most Igor-like assistant, and Lalo, your favorite, Marjorie Greene, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The minute she said, "I've been drinking too much Kool-Aid," they were like, "This person is out of her mind."
Yeah, but Joe Kent broke it down. Though Joe Kent said Iran didn't have weapons. They didn't have any nuclear weapons, and Trump knew it, and that they actually said, Iran actually said, "We will give up all our nuclear."
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, they were in negotiations for this. And
no, but they said that they would give up all their.
Exactly. And that's when they started dropping bombs on them
2 hours later.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And if you remember, Joe Kent is also a rabid Trump supporter, an election denier, a January 6th participant. And the president.
He's got seven kinds of rabies. Let's put it clear.
The president said, well, he wasn't qualified for anything. He doesn't know what he's doing. But the president was the one who hired him for that particular job.
Right.
So Tulsi Gabbard ended up giving him a job. So he went from that agency to where she is now.
Oh, my God. Tulsi Gabbard, that woman.
And Trump continues to say, well, he's not qualified for anything. I mean, it's just one insane thing after another. One of the things that we can at least agree on is that, you know, something like what happened with the United Farm Workers doesn't mean that everything that has been done to help the community has been erased. And that's one thing that Dolores Huerta is going to continue to do regardless. I mean, you know, how many 96-year-old people can say that? And
you know, my uncle always told me about Cesar Chavez. He told me, I don't like that man. Screw that guy. I'm like, why? Why do you hate him? Well, first of all, he's against immigrants. And we come from a long line of immigrants. And he's against us getting jobs in the field. And like, I'm like, wait, look, he did. I was trying to argue against it. But at this point, I can't argue against my uncle because he's right. We have that guy is a monster.
Yeah, well, part of the reason that Chavez was against the undocumented immigrants in the beginning was because he felt that was going to dilute the unionizing power of the workers who were here and the money that they were going to be making at the time. So but that, of course, was way before all the New York Times reporting came out, which changes everything.
Right.
But it doesn't change what Dolores Huerta has done. And I've always said she has always, from the very beginning, deserved a state holiday and statues and schools named after her.
That's right. And we stand with Dolores Huerta, and the Pocho Hour Power stands with her and all the victims. And Patricia, we got to get going because we have our next guest. And you're welcome to stay on if you need a little therapy and ask any questions you might have. But thank you so much for joining us, as always, on Pocho Hour Power.
All right. We'll see you next week and see what else is going on. But
that's right. We'll check your ankle monitor.
Yeah, you have to report next week. We'll see you around the same time, right?
My parole officer says hello and thank you for letting me on the show.
All right. Thank you, Patricia Guadalupe out of Washington, D.C. And I say let's just get right to it because I've had a knot in my stomach. I don't know about all of you, but this week was just a hell of a week. And our friend Frank Contreras, our correspondent from Mexico City, had the best suggestion to invite someone to maybe where we can all talk about this. And I think we're going to go past the bottom of the hour. We'll go to a break after that. But let me welcome right now Laura Calderon de la Barca. Welcome to the Pocho Hour Power.
Thank you so much, Lalo, for having me. And hi, everybody.
Her voice sounds so relaxing.
I know.
Welcome to the Pocho Hour Power, Laura.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming on such short notice. But Frank suggested, everybody in the world was texting everybody else in the world, and especially in our community, in the Chicano community here in the U.S. And Frank was texting me from Mexico City, and we all couldn't believe the news and all this. And I don't know if we're dealing with it properly, by is there a way to deal with it properly? I want to ask you, Laura, what do you think? What do you see? How do you see it?
Well, you know, first of all, I would like to name that this has been really a collective trauma for the affected community, because, you know, it really has impacted everybody who is both related to the movement, but not just that, the Chicano community, the community of Southern California. You know, Cesar Chavez has had such an important role as a, you know, role model for many people, as a figure that had been an icon. So all the social meanings constructed around him and all the people who admired him really have felt a tremendous shock from finding out about these horrific abuses that have occurred. And so the first thing to name is that the level of impact of this is not just individual, but you know, really collective. And when trauma is in the room, you know, we get disorganized, you know, shock comes in and we are disoriented. We don't know kind of where to go, how to be. There's also the disbelief, you know, Lalo, you were saying we all couldn't believe the news, right? So that's part of it. So I think that having some orientation around how does it first feel and then how to move from there might be, you know, a good idea. So just naming this, then once the disbelief starts to wear off, then more intense emotions come, you know, grief, feeling betrayed, probably many women angry, enraged about this. And the first thing is to make room for that, to give spaces, to find spaces, to create spaces together where people can come, because a collective wound needs collective tending. Mm-hmm. So finding spaces to come together and share how people feel, that starts to let like all the emotional water start to settle, and to know that it's going to be very normal if you sometimes feel like crying, if you feel sad, if you feel angry, and sometimes you might not even understand why. To know that that's okay, that's a normal response in the face of an abnormal situation. And that's part of what this is. Now, you were saying, are we doing this correctly? I think that in, you know, there's something that I really love being Mexicana, being a Latina. We tend to come together when there is an impact in our lives. And that, I believe, is something that is a very important strength that Latino communities have. To come together, to be together, there's also a lot of healing wisdom within our communities from our healers, our abuelitas, the people who know how to hold circles, you know, those people that we do know and trust from our religious communities, those who have the space and the capacity, holding spaces for people to come and share how they feel. And, you know, I think that's a very important thing. But also, it's important to keep in mind that trauma tries to quicken things because there's like a survival reaction. You know, there's also a fear. What's going to happen now that this icon has been, you know, like the horrific things that happened have been now revealed. So slowing down and not trying to fix things quickly, but really giving time for healing to lead what happens, rather than for trauma to lead the conversation, is what I feel is really what's needed right now.
Yeah, I felt that also, and you guys chime in if you have something, but I just wanted to say, like, I have, it's very intense feelings all the way around, mm-hmm. lots of different viewpoints about it, all kind of like the knives coming out, and it's a little disturbing. And I just felt like so many things coming at us at once. Like, how do you, you know, deal with that? I mean, that's just, you're just talking through, I guess, right?
That's one way, but there's also other ways in which, you know, and there are communities have different kinds of resources. from moving. You know, one of the ways in which one can discharge, you know, like rage is doing physical movements. Like on the bed, you can put some pillows and pound. That would be one way in which you don't hurt others. And but you know, it's important to allow that to move. Now, it's important also to not just discharge that anger, but allow anger to become, as it connects to our heart, into a force for transformation, Lalo. Because, you know, when I look at it from this collective trauma perspective, I see how often men who end up in positions of power end up acting out traumas that have an intergenerational and a collective dimension. Now, I'm saying this not to justify, not to condone at all, but because I also feel that it's so important that that we don't dehumanize people, because then we're stepping into, you know, responding with trauma to, you know, with more trauma to the trauma that's already there.
Yeah.
You know, now it's not easy to do that initially because there's all these emotions that are just there that are so intense. That's why it's important to give those emotions a space where they can be tended to so that we can then later move into this other conversation. What do we do with this? You know, because there's, of course, we cannot see, you know, we need to look at what is happening with the men that are acting in this way, but we need to look at it in a way that is conducive to healing.
Yeah.
Not to more dehumanization, not to simply condoning him, not condoning, sorry, condemning him, you know, because people who do those things have also been deeply wounded. Now, there's a social mandate for men to hide those wounds. And I feel that is one of the most important things that needs to change.
We're not encouraged to talk about
and
Laura, it.
Laura, exactly. I think yes. a lot of it is like a lot of people feel there's a betrayal.
Yes.
And when you're betrayed, you lose trust.
Right.
Totally.
And, where do you go when you lose trust?
But the other aspect of it is men aren't supposed to go get counseling. Mm. Like if a man says he was abused, people just right. laugh it off and be like, yeah, whatever, blah, 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 blah. So I think she brings up a very good point.
I mean,
hurt people hurt people.
Exactly.
So if you don't get therapy to heal, then you're not going to heal. You're going to continue the traumas that your parents did to you and their parents did to them.
Exactly. Now, I think that we also need to bring that conversation outside of the therapy room to notice that it has a collective dimension that has to do with how we build our identity as men, as women, and how there is such little space for men's vulnerability. Now, the question for me is, well, why is that so? And that's where I can look at history and recognize that a lot of that, I believe, at least for Latino men, comes from the wounds that have been present in Latin America from the conquest, where the men there were unable, the native men particularly, were unable to stop the onslaught of the Europeans coming. And so there was a sense of failure that was left as an untended wound for men, where then they end up needing to act out to get a sense of their own masculinity reestablished. But because that kind of just is landing on top of the wound, not really attending the wound, then it never gets resolved. And so having the potential to look with kindness at our wounds as men, I feel is such an important transformation that needs to happen. And for me, events like these break through like a covering of those wounds that lie underneath that can then come to the surface. And right now, I feel there is a potential for a really profound healing. If men decide, I do not want this, all the pain that all these women suffered, to be for nothing. I want to be part of the transformation of who we are as men, so I can be a guardian, a protector of life, not one that hurts those that are less strong than me.
Wow, that is brought it back all the way to the conquista. Oh my God.
All the way to the conquista, Lalo.
Hey, we're talking to Dr. Laura Calderon de la Barca Sanchez. Mm-hmm. That one out. Prominent Mexican psychotherapist, live from CDMX, right? Live from Mexico
Correct.
City. And let's talk a few more minutes. We blew past the break because this is too good. And we're all going through this big trauma right now with the Cesar Chavez revelations. And also, you know, what's the psychology of – I was saying that I was really taken aback by some of the comments against the survivors, namely against our good friend of the show, my good friend Dolores Huerta. How do you – I mean, what's that about? Why do they blame the victim?
Yeah. You know, the thing is, when we have idealized someone, often we're projecting on that person something that is of profound value to us. And when we end up realizing that our idealization is not real, the part of us that needed to idealize might be a very young part that does not have the maturity to actually look at both the tremendously terrible things that happened and at the legacy of this man that also has so much light in it, you know, because it's a contradiction in a way. And it takes maturity to be able to hold both things in one's awareness. You know, and not everybody has had the conditions in their life to allow them to develop that maturity. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I think is super important to name is that for me, the first thing is really to tend to the victims, the women that were the ones most impacted by this, and to let them know that we see their courage and we appreciate that through that courage, an opportunity for healing at a very large level is being made available to this community. And that I honor them for that and that I stand with them. And I know that some people are going to be very disturbed by this, but that's part of what happens when, you know, the mud that's been at the bottom rises to the top, it gets cloudy. Mm-hmm. So we need. That's why we need to slow down. Like when you enter a room that's dark, you have to enter, you have to stop so that your eyes can adjust and then you can make more intelligent moves. So we need to slow down and tend to all the pain, tend to all the anger, tend to the feeling of betrayal. And then when that is, that's exactly what allows us to start to metabolize all this pain and all that has happened. And then start to find what are the right movements here? How can we integrate these things into a healing process for this community so that all this pain is not in vain?
Yeah.
So well, collectively,
there's a lot of mud going around. But
right. But when you're in a collective trauma like this, is there any... I mean, I know it's like everyone has their own feelings to what's happened, but how do you bring the community back together in a positive way? Are there more specific exercises or things we can do as a community?
Yes. So I think that it's important to know that being able to have spaces that are coherent is important. So when you have people that have already the capacity to be with intense emotions, then you can have a mix of people more easily. But otherwise, there might be grief circles, people who are feeling grief right now, mm-hmm. to invite them to come together and express their grief. If there's other people, you know, particularly for women, to have a safe space where they can express their anger. You know, so having separated spaces initially for those people who might need that allows them then to later come together and speak and start to find ways of moving forward together. But initially, you need to allow the differentiated expressions to have their own space so it can be done in an emotionally safe way. Because if somebody who's super angry right now meets with somebody who's in a very deep place of grief, you know, they might not be able to understand or have any room for the grief of the other. So that's why it's important to validate both ways of experiencing this and to tend to each of those emotions. So that would be one thing to do. Now, as I was saying, there's a lot of that of resources that our communities have, from singing together, from dancing our grief or our anger, from connecting to nature, praying together, to other kinds of resources that come more from the neuroscience field, where we can allow our bodies to lead their own medicine, such as, for example, with humming, you know, to help regulate our nervous systems, if that's what we need, or with connecting to those of us that we love, going to places that feel nourishing to us, connecting to nature is also something very important that we can do. And
Jeff likes to hum Sweet Caroline.
That's one good way of going with that.
Yes, I know? Do. That's my jam.
But, you know, getting trauma-informed, I think, is a very important thing. Getting educated on what happens in our nervous system and how can we do this together, you know. And I work for the Collective Change Lab. And in our website, you can find some resources for that. And I'm happy to forward you more information that
what
people
is
can
the
access.
URL collectivechangelab.org or what is it?
Yes, yeah, collectivechangelab.org.
Ooh, I knew it.
Right, good.
I feel and so can trauma-free right now that my brain cleared up.
That's wonderful, Lalo.
Hey, Dr. Laura Calderon de la Barca, thank you so much for joining us on the Pocho Hour Power. We could definitely all use another hour of therapy. We have our guests, including Frank. And if you need to bill anybody, bill Jeffrey Keller.
Okay.
No, Jeffrey Pittman. Get it right.
Jeffrey Pittman. Okay. But thank you guys so much for the opportunity for being here today for your community. And, you know, my heart with you all. And you can find me also in LinkedIn, Dr. Laura Calderon de la Barca, and at the Collective Change Lab, collectivechangelab.org. And
That's great.
Best wishes this to be really an opportunity for collective healing.
Laura, stay on standby, because I have a feeling this year or in the coming future, we're going to have a lot of need for you.
Well, I'll be here. Take good care.
Thank you, Doctor.
You're welcome.
That's Dr. Laura Calderon. Thank you. Let's just jump right to another Mexico City call. Mexico City guest, Frank Contreras. The Pocho Hour Power.
Yes, Frank, are you there? Are you there?
I'm singing your theme song. I just made up a theme song.
There's my theme song. Hey, guys. Thanks. I really appreciate that segment with Dr. Laura.
Hey, how are you going to follow that, Frank?
I'm just going to get some Kleenex and work through it. I'm going to work through it.
Just hum through the segment.
Really powerful ideas and words, and I'm really grateful that she had a chance to come on and speak to our community in this moment. It's a really difficult time, guys. You know, when I was a boy, I was born in Tucson, I told you, but we moved to San Jose, California, and I was growing up in the mid-60s, late-60s, and we went to the UFW meetings. So I saw all of these icons personally as a little boy, and it worked its way into my psyche, I think. And I think it, rather than seeing individuals as like these shining, iconic leaders, what I really saw as a little boy was a movement. A movement that was really about trying to bring some justice to some people who really deserved it, you know? Yeah. And I think that's how little Frank viewed the UFW movement, that beautiful black eagle with the red banner, what it means to us, and that deep sense of identity connected to those images, you know? And sometimes we connect to the individuals, but I also think like the movement itself was something, well, historic, right?
Yeah, really I had one weird comment on my cartoon, and it said, "What? At least change the flag color of the UFW flag." I'm like, "What are you talking about? The UFW goes on, the movement goes on, and that's what I think is part of the lesson here that we have to learn, that it's not just one person."
Yeah, it's really something. And, you know, Mexico did keep an eye on that, that big story. It was published in every major newspaper in Mexico. It was broadcast on radio and television. People here, as you heard from Dr. Laura, people here are aware in Mexico of what happened, and they understand, you know, the deep blow that this is for the community in the United States. So down for that, all right, guys? Yeah. I appreciate the time here. Thanks, guys, for having us on from Mexico City. I wanted to give you a couple of two quick updates to let you know what's happening. You know, more traumatic news. We had another Mexican national die in the custody of ICE. It was reported this week that there was a teenager who died in ICE's custody. I'm struggling now to find the name of this young man, 19-year-old indigenous Mayan man. He was in ICE custody, and I'm struggling to find his name here for you. Sorry, I'm just so taken back by the words of Laura. The death of Royer Perez Jimenez. He died in the Glades County Detention Center in ICE custody in Florida. You know, how many Mexicans and other humans have died now this year alone in ICE custody. This is a story that Mexico is definitely keeping a very close eye on. The Mexican government is calling for an investigation. They want to make sure that the family is reunited with the body of the young man who died. You know, Mexico's keeping a very close eye on what's happening. President Claudia Sheinbaum, today on Friday in the morning news conference, she spoke live from Cancun. And she explained that, you know, that this event had taken place. She was also giving information about what's taking place in security. It looks like things are improving slightly in Mexico in terms of the kinds of drug-related homicides that we've been seeing. This is according to the Mexican government. So Mexico keeping a very close eye on what's taking place with their nationals living in the United States, going through the situation with ICE raids and all of that, what that means throughout the United States, especially there in Los Angeles, where you guys are broadcasting live from. Also, I wanted to report to you guys about a program that the federal government in Mexico has. In Spanish, it's called Mexico Te Abraza. And it's, I guess you would translate it as Mexico embraces you. This is for Mexicans who are being deported from the United States.
Oh, wow.
And according to the Mexican government, nearly 190,000 Mexicans have been deported from the United States since President Trump took his oath of office the second time around. And so a lot of them are being brought in back to Mexico. It looks like the vast majority are not coming on airlines flying into the Mexican capital. Instead, they're coming on roadways and buses, crossing in through Tijuana from El Paso into Ciudad Juarez and other parts of the U.S.-Mexico border. And so what happens is the Mexican government has set up places where they can be received, where they can be given food and housing immediately, and then they're given a certificate for the value of about 100 U.S. dollars. That's 2,000 Mexican pesos. Doesn't sound like a lot of money. In Mexico, it goes a long way. That amount of money from the government can get you from the place you're deported to your hometown. Let's say you're living in central Mexico and southern Mexico. You could get a bus ride back home.
That's right. Hop on that Tres Estrellas.
Yeah, you know, you can get on that Tres Estrellas and get back to your people. It's a very different approach to dealing with migrants compared to what the United States government is doing right now. This is called Mexico Te Abraza. So it's an interesting program if you want to look for that on the internet. The Interior Secretary, Rosa Isela Rodriguez, reported that Mexico Abraza implemented support to Mexicans deported from the United States starting in January 2025, a little over a year ago, when Mr. Trump began his second time in office here, and during a presidential news conference this week, they commented that 34 Mexican government agencies, 34 of them, including the Mexican military, have been providing support to deported migrants, people coming back from the United States back to Mexico, and they're sending all kinds of support. They're giving access to housing. They're giving access to hospitals, to medical care. If they're coming back with children, they're making sure the children are getting enrolled again in Mexican schools, that if they need help with language, because maybe the children now speak only English, they're going to get that kind of help. So this
the
is a very
kids are probably going like 6'7", 6'7".
6'7", 6'7". Yeah, exactly.
The Mexicans are like, what the hell are you doing?
What? Yeah. So these are a couple of things that are making the news agenda here in Mexico, and a lot's more to keep an eye on. Of course, Mexico is also watching the war in Iran. Mexican gasoline prices have held steady. The Mexican government is subsidizing gasoline. They're trying to make certain that you're going to continue to pay the same for a liter here.
That's wow, that's great.
Yeah, so that the Mexican economy doesn't get thrown on its head.
Wow.
Like some economies in North America are experiencing now. Yeah, this is a very different way of doing government compared
to
what we're seeing in the United States.
Yeah, a good way of doing government.
It looks like a way that works.
We got that is so great. We got to wrap it up, but maybe for next time, I would love to hear more about what the Mexican authorities have been doing about tourists and the extranjeros, the foreigners that have been claiming the beaches all over Mexico and claiming that they are private. And we gotta move on to Meredith Brown, immigration attorney of renown. So how about that? Report on that for us next time, maybe.
Sounds good. We'll get on it right away, guys. And thanks a lot. We really appreciate it. Great show today, by the way.
Hey, you made it. Stop bragging.
Gracias, guys. Thank you. Take care. Put your hour power.
Yes, sir.
Contreras from Mexico City. And let's join. This is the show where we take no breaks, man.
Zero breaks on 90.7 FM KPFK.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
You're welcome, young man.
You're cute, man. That was so good. And now we're joined by Meredith Brown, immigration attorney of renown. What's your hour power?
She's a star.
Hello, how are you?
We're good. I don't know what that scary voice is in the background, but we'll light a candle. I light a Juan Gabriel candle.
We need a psychologist back. We need a therapist back.
I know we need a therapist for whoever's making noise. How are you doing, and what is happening in the world of immigration?
Well, it looks like we're going to be getting a new director for DHS. And I was just researching. DHS is really huge. I know that we're focusing on CBP, ICE, the Immigration Service Branch, USCIS, TSA, but also the Coast Guard is there. Secret Service is also under his jurisdiction if Senator Mullen gets this nomination. He's definitely MAGA, but it'll be interesting to see how he administers the department. You know, immigration enforcement is still really important to these folks, but hopefully it'll be a little less. That's our hope. Another news real quickly. I know that TPS for Salvadoreños is coming up for renewal. I don't think it will be renewed. So if anyone knows, or if you are Salvadoran that's listening to the Hour of Power, really important to start moving and looking for alternatives, help. We're pretty much, even though that President Trump is buddies with Bukele, President Bukele de Salvador, it looks like he'll probably eliminate that. I just got back from a trip to Guatemala and focusing on judicial reform, which is looking really good. They're going to be nominating, and the president will determine who will be the new Fiscal General, the Attorney General, which is a really important role to crack down on corruption and to help Guatemala in its efforts for democratic reforms. And also, well, there are two breaking news. One is California is giving $50 million to help with the defense of immigrants. Thank God for California and their leadership. And also, a federal judge, it's just breaking news on the New York Times. They're tossing the restrictions on the press. It's not immigration related, but I thought you'd want to know. Restrictions on the press in the Pentagon. Remember, they were like, you can't come in. You can't have, off the record discussions with generals or whatever, and it has to be all regimented and controlled by the executive branch. And a federal judge tossed that out and said, no, there's a thing called the First Amendment, and you have to respect that, basically. So
that's what's going on with our immigration coverage with ICE, CBP. I mean, they don't, you know, I mean, it was a clown show with, you know, homegirl, what's her face, Kristi Noem. And we could not answer one thing straight, you know, under congressional investigation or testimony, nothing.
But that's the hallmark of the entire administration.
Yeah.
Right. It's just basically to not let us focus on the fundamental rights of the Constitution. And like Rachel Maddow always says, of course, listen to what they're saying, but really study what they're doing. And also watch where the money is going, how they're investing. I wouldn't be surprised if this humongous budget for ICE is somehow being siphoned for the war, because they're coming up short. That war is hugely expensive.
$1 billion a day.
But I wouldn't be surprised if they're pulling shenanigans to get that funded at the expense of, because ICE is bloated. I mean, ICE, they're calling in DACA recipients. I want to go to the press, so maybe we can have this guy on or something, and also more broadly do a press conference. Why in the hell is ICE calling in a gentleman that has deferred action from deportation to go and report to ICE? It just doesn't make sense. And I think we need to continue to really be denouncing these practices. And this kid, you know, he basically works. He has no criminal record. Was brought when he was a minor, didn't know what was going on when he came into the United States, doesn't have any blame on his immigration record whatsoever. And here they are calling him in. It's like, you guys are really bored, aren't you? You can't find the really heavy-duty criminals, so let's go after the dreamers, you know?
And well, they have numbers they have to. You know, they got quotas they got to get.
Exactly.
And they are bloated. They don't want to run down the street.
Right. But I'm hoping there'll still be these confirmation hearings like we saw with Kristi Noem, really important, because, you know, they have to answer. And if they're evading the answer, at least the public knows what they're about. They're just basically there to serve President Trump. That's it. End of story. You know, no criteria, no congressional oversight. Even the guy that was with the CIA that was right next to somebody recently that was testifying, that
Joe Kent,
couldn't answer. Right? Mullen, wasn't it? Yeah. Couldn't answer basic questions on the war, basically, whether or not the intelligence was being presented to President Trump. And they were just like, well, he made the final call and we don't know. And again, being very evasive. But that is really, immigration is serious. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, this war in Iran is it's escalating, and it's going to get much more ugly before it gets better.
You know, in one of my strips I did about in La Cucaracha, I have these two ICE militia guys, and they're talking to Memo, the undocumented immigrant, and he's like, why aren't you going to Iran? And they're like, oh no, we prefer to work here. And oh, come on, I should go to Iran. They have borders in Iran. You can make Iran great again, you know. And they're like, no thank you, you know.
Right, because the ICE actions are basically a domestic invasion. It's a military invasion on the blue states, because it's a revenge action, right, from Trump.
All Trump cares about is money. And I'm telling you right now, Jared Kushner is in negotiations with Israel.
In Saudi Arabia.
And with Israel so Trump and him can rebuild Gaza and put Trump towers and put Trump golf courses. And that's what this is really about. It's about fattening Trump's pocket. That's all he cares about. He don't care about nobody else but Donald Orange Man Trump.
Well, why does he want all that money? Ain't he about to die soon? He's
trying to fatten his cankles.
That cholesterol's getting fat. I know that.
That orange is starting to bruise. It's way overripe.
Oh my! And I'm afraid so are we. It's been a great Pocho Hour of Power. Meredith Brown, thank you so much for joining us. We missed you, and we want you back next time.
Absolutely. I'll be in Mexico next week, but then the following week. And for any information, we're at infolegal.net. If you have any concerns or whatever, Now's the time to get that information before an emergency happens.
Yeah, that's right. Mina, world jet setter. Okay. Meredith Brown, thank you so much for joining us on the Pocho Hour of Power. I want to thank Frank Contreras also. I want to thank Dr. Laura.